This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and joined every Monday by Adam Burke as we look back at the week that was, look ahead to another busy week, another week of action for everybody to throw their money into a fire as they try to figure out that conference. But excited to get it up and running here, and I just want to start off by letting everyone know the boys out on the island always deliver. What a dominant performance by the Bows. Our friend Timmy Chang, 38-6 win over San Diego State. And it leads us to this question. Does anybody from the group of five want to make the college football playoff, Adam Burke?
Somebody wants to. Somebody's going to have to. I don't know who it's going to be. I mean, you know, Memphis in the driver's seat and they blow one at home to Tulane. So, I don't know, man. Well, then again, like, does anybody from the ACC deserve to be in the college football playoff? Probably not. So I don't know, man. It could be a really, really chalky playoff with some big numbers in the early round and even the you know, bye round games.
Yeah, I think the quarterfinals, looking at how these teams are kind of shaping up, I think the quarterfinals have a chance to be really good on New Year's Day. Three games New Year's Day, one on New Year's Eve. But yeah, you look at the group of five. I think right now, and look, as wacky as it's been, there's plenty of opportunities for teams to trip and fall here. But I think the way it's playing out right now, South Florida has to go to Navy on Saturday, which you face that option offense. Blake Horvath didn't play on Saturday night in South Bend. I don't think that would have mattered. Notre Dame was relentless in that second half. They absolutely put it on the midshipmen. South Florida is the best G5 team. They proved that early on in the year. They lose at Memphis. If South Florida makes it, and they are the favorite to do so at plus 125, I think people who do power ratings like yourself, Adam, and many others, they're the best G5 team. I'm not saying they would beat whoever they ultimately would play or give them a run for their money, but I do think South Florida, Alex Golish's squad, when you see that team, in my opinion, they look a little bit different than the rest of the group of five.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I'm checking through here to see who my top group of five team is. I do think it is South Florida, based on just my quick look here. So, yeah, and also, I mean, you know, we did get some data points early on in the season, at least the Florida data point, that they can hang with a more talented team. And, you know, ironically enough, that was a game where they actually kind of showed up on defense, which hasn't really always been the case for them throughout the course of the season here. And this is the thing too, right? So we kind of talked about this with Notre Dame last week on the show, and they followed through yet again of putting style points up to try and strengthen their case a little bit. South Florida probably won't be able to do that against Navy just because of the style that Navy plays. It's very hard to run up a bunch of numbers with their long sustained drives. But if they win that game, you can fully expect Alex Golesh to try to completely humiliate UAB and Rice to, you know, kind of improve their standing a little bit. Obviously, they'd still need to win the conference championship game. Maybe running it back against Navy, who knows? Probably playing Tulane. But yeah, you know, those are two spots where I think I would lay, obviously not any number, but it would take a lot for me to not take South Florida against UAB and Rice because I think they want to run it up against both of them.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you look at some of these conference standings right now. In the American, you've got 5 1-loss teams. Navy lost this weekend, but it was out of conference to Notre Dame. South Florida, Tulane, North Texas, East Carolina, and Navy all sitting with one loss. It'll work itself out. Memphis was, per the committee, the highest-ranked G5 team. That'll obviously change when the rankings come out this Tuesday. I still would not anticipate any G5 team to be ranked. But, yeah, it's kind of fun to look at the numbers and the market on how the G5 is going to play out in the playoff. And right now it's USF plus 125, James Madison plus 190, and North Texas 2-1. North Texas, of course, has a home loss against South Florida, but the remaining schedule for the Mean Green, UAB, Rice, and Temple. So they've got a pretty good shot to ultimately get into the AAC championship game, but I imagine that'll be kind of a cluster down the stretch there. Tulane, similarly, they've got FAU, Temple, and Charlotte. So I don't know what the tie breaks are going to ultimately be. Temple versus North Texas, they did not play each other. So we'll see how that ultimately plays out there. But Tulane, by the way, 6-1 to make the college football playoff. You mentioned it, so let's get to it. And the AAC kind of looks like the ACC this year, and another weekend of absolute carnage in that conference. We were finally able to slay the frauds. UVA, get the hell out of my life. Wake Forest, taking care of business. And I'll say this, Adam, it's kind of funny and ironic how Virginia lost. This has nothing to do with the Chandler Morris injury, which really sucked. I hate to see that. But you look at UVA and how fortunate they've been, and we've talked about a horseshoe up their rear end. Well, guess what happened this week? Based off SP Plus's postgame win expectancy, UVA was 80.5% in that game against Wake Forest. And you brought up the stat, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, that Virginia had not lost a fumble all year. Well, they lost 3 on Saturday against Wake Forest.
Yeah, and you know, also gave up a punt return touchdown, which is which is kind of amusing too. So, you know, look, and we're not UVA haters. You know, if you're a Virginia fan or an ACC fan, you know, we don't hate your team. We don't have it out for your team. It's just we're looking for betting opportunities. You know, we're looking for situations where teams are in line for some positive or negative regression, and Virginia was just a giant snowball rolling down a hill of negative regression. They just kept packing it on week after week after week. Yeah, bummer to see Morris go down, but honestly, like, it's just wild to me. Wake Forest wins with 64 passing yards, 9 of 23. Wisconsin wins where their punter is their leading passer. College football is just wild and wacky, man.
Well, you know, we tend to do this, and I've gotten a couple of tweets, Adam, about our Monday pod, how we're just kind of all over the place. And I do like it. I do, believe it or not, have bullet points that I want to get to. And we do have things that we hit on Mondays, but staying in just the absurdity of the weekend and the late night slate, while I was thoroughly enjoying every second of Hawaii's dismantling of San Diego State, and shout out to Matt Eumanns, who stayed in the rain the whole game to watch the Rainbow Warriors win by 32. How about Sam Houston beating Oregon State? I don't know how they did this, because you pointed out the box score. Postgame win expectancy for Sam Houston was 4.5%. Our buddy Preston over Parker at Stats O'War had
Fleming.
The graph of how bad did my team get beat, and I think Sam Houston almost broke the graph. So it was a pretty wild game between the Bearcats with a K. Somehow they went to Corvallis as a 20.5-point underdog and won that game.
They got outgained 474 to 157 and won the game 21-17. Not only that, they were down 10-0 after the first quarter. So, yeah, it's just crazy. And, you know, look, I realize we do jump around quite a bit on this show, but, you know, it's always interesting to look at these misleading box score types of games, because usually there's some sort of market movement on Sunday night, Monday morning, as everyone's kind of going through, the NFL's done. You start going through and updating, you know, your models, your spreadsheets, looking through the box scores, all these kinds of things. Parker posts that graph, you know, like all these different types of things. And like, usually you see line moves as a result of that. So, you know, I think box score study is really important. I talk about it in the context of my power ratings, you know, because sometimes a final score can be very, very misleading. It might look like a team covered the number comfortably, but maybe it was turnovers, maybe it was special teams, maybe it was an injury, you know, something like that. So you want to account for all those things. And the misleading box scores are a really, really big part of it, because, again, you can get some line value. You know, if a team's expectation was to win the game, or maybe they dominated the box score and didn't win, that's a team that may be underpriced going into the next week.
You know, and by the way, I called him Preston for some reason. Parker Fleming, of course, our buddy over at Stats O'War. You mentioned the ACC, and wouldn't it be just so ACC in 2025 if the Duke Blue Devils were to win this conference after losing 3 non-conference games? They lose over the weekend in a absolute, what I fully expected to be a shootout. It was a pretty fun game to watch between UConn and Duke. Tons of offense, not a lot of stops. UConn ends up getting a couple of big turnovers in that one. And Joey Fagnano, you mentioned it before we went on air, and I mentioned it last week when we talked about this game and gave it out as a best bet. He now has 25 touchdowns and no interceptions. I mean, Jim Mora, as much as I gave him crap, rightfully so, for his terrible tenure at UCLA, he's been a miracle worker at UConn. This team is more than capable. They're now 7-3. Interesting one this week against Air Force, which we could talk about a little bit later on in the show. But the Duke Blue Devils now 5-4, but I believe they control their own destiny to go to the ACC championship game. They have Virginia this week, where they're almost a touchdown favorite, at North Carolina, and then home to Wake. And right now, the ACC has 5 1-loss teams in conference play. Georgia Tech, Virginia, Pitt, SMU, and Duke. Pitt still has on the schedule, not including a non-conference game against Notre Dame this weekend, Georgia Tech and Miami. So this thing's going to get kind of figured out here over the next couple of weeks. And there's a pretty decent chance that the Duke Blue Devils, despite 3 non-conference losses, Adam, is playing for this conference championship.
Yeah, real quick on UConn. I mean, you know, last year, their 4 losses, Maryland, Duke, Wake Forest, and Syracuse. So all 4 of their losses to power conference teams. And that game against Duke was right there for the taking. So this one was probably personal for Jim Mora, you know, and his team. And if you remember, he went on an epic rant last year about the officiating in the ACC. You know, when they were playing against ACC competition, you know, the bias with the officials, all that kind of thing. It feels like here this year, I mean, you know, they beat Boston College. You know, they probably should have beaten Syracuse early on in the season. They would definitely beat the current version of Syracuse. Is he going to level up with a job? I mean, there are so many availabilities that, like, you know, you're going to have good coaches from the group of 5 get some of these power 5 jobs. Like, I think Mora could potentially get one of these.
I mean, honestly, why wouldn't he? Right. I mean, he's old. He's 63.
Yeah.
You know, could he go back to UCLA? That would be quite the return.
UCLA is going to be a really interesting hire. I'm very curious to see who they end up with.
And not going to be playing in the Rose Bowl either, going to SoFi Stadium.
Right. Yeah.
All right, but back to the ACC. Yeah.
Back to the ACC, like, it's just, like you said, this thing's going to sort itself out. It's going to sort itself out from a results standpoint. And this is another one, too, right? Like, Pitt playing Notre Dame this week has absolutely no bearing whatsoever on the ACC. But then they get Georgia Tech in Miami. So, you know, Pitt's got a very brutal schedule the rest of the way here. I told you this last week on the show. I still think it's true. I still think Georgia Tech is the best team in this conference. But you know who's kind of creeping up here? And, I mean, they had that hideous game against Wake Forest, but Rhett Lashley's doing it again with SMU. And this is a really good football team, too. And they get Louisville at home, you know, in their next game, and then on the road to Cal, and I don't know what the hell Cal is. I don't think either one of us does. I mean, I could really envision a scenario where it's Georgia Tech-SMU.
I mean, if SMU wins out, they're in great shape, obviously, and that Louisville game is going to loom large. I don't know what the tiebreak scenario would be if we have a 3-way tie with 1-loss teams, which is certainly possible with Duke, SMU, and Georgia Tech, or Virginia, SMU, and Georgia Tech. So we'll see how it all sorts itself out. But yeah, Louisville, that's just classic Jeff Brohm. I mean, Jeff Brohm is a big favorite. Is terrible. You know, you lose a game that you had no business losing at home to Virginia earlier this year. You kind of play with your food against Boston College. Similarly, on the road to Virginia Tech, you win both of those games. And then Cal, from all sounds of it, I mean, it looked like that team had kind of been down and out, and they go to Louisville and they get the Stormy Bonantoni bump, apparently, because they win that game in overtime. And our guy, Jaron Chiave Sangapulateli, throws for 323. How about the receiving line for Jacob DeJesus, the UNLV transfer? 16 catches, 158 yards, and a touchdown, and the touchdown coming in overtime. That was a pretty shocking result over the weekend to see Cal as a double-digit dog go into Louisville and get that win. And I'm fully anticipating, Adam, all that time that people spent last week telling us how Miami needed to be ahead of Notre Dame because they had the same amount of losses and Miami beat Notre Dame by 3 at home, I'm fully anticipating that same energy to be put out there with a Louisville team, same amount of losses as Miami, but a win at Miami. You know, I'm fully expecting that energy to be out there. I can't wait to hear it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it will be. You know, this is something that's really tough, too, to kind of talk about here at the end of the season, because, you know, I mentioned this in my power ratings article this week. Like, I still do them and I still try to, you know, get some line value, you know, Sunday afternoon, Sunday night, Monday before the market kind of sets in a little bit. But, you know, my power ratings become a lot less important to me later on in the season because you start playing amateur psychologist with a lot of these teams. And in the case of Louisville, right, you lose at home in a big favorite role. Your college football playoff dreams are gone. And if they lose to Clemson this week, we're just talking about SMU and the way that the thing's set up for SMU. Does Louisville have any interest in going on the road to Dallas and playing that game before playing rival Kentucky to finish out the regular season? So, you know, these are all things that you have to kind of take into account that are not really quantifiable. You know, they're very much speculative, but these are things that, you know, you have to think about here at this time of the college football season. So, you know, when you start thinking about maybe dabbling in some of these futures markets of, you know, who's going to win the ACC, who's going to win, you know, one of the other conferences that are out there, who's going to win the Group of Five berth, make sure you're looking at, you know, the upcoming schedule first and foremost, honestly, because you may get some spots where there could be teams that do end up rolling over, and that may have a significant impact on how the playoff shakes out.
You know, I didn't have a ton of eyes on Clemson, Florida State for, honestly, good reason. I know humans had Clemson in this spot, and I'll tell you what, I don't think Clemson's quit. I don't know if they're a great football team, but I don't think they've quit. They're 4-5, obviously. They got screwed out of a win against Duke, and now they bounce back with that win over Florida State. That Louisville game, the number has come down, and, you know, we do market correction or overreaction. There wasn't a ton of movement from the look-ahead lines to where we are now, but this was one of the bigger movers. Clemson opened as a 5.5-point dog at Louisville. Louisville loses to Cal. Clemson beats Florida State, and now that number's creeping down. It's down to 3.5, and honestly, I wouldn't be surprised, and actually, as we're sitting here, the market just moved again. It's down to 3, so money is coming in on the Clemson Tigers in this spot on Friday night in Louisville.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really surprise me. You know, I mean, this Clemson team is still super talented. You know, I don't know exactly what happened this season. You know, I know that they haven't leveraged the transfer portal and well enough, and that's something that's been talked about a ton. But I mean, I still think this team is really, really talented. I know that early on in the season, they were missing Antonio Williams at wide receiver. And, you know, I think that was something that really hurt Cade Klubnik early on because that was a guy that he used quite a bit last season. Maybe it was something with Dabo. Maybe it's, you know, the coordinators aren't meshing together because, you know, he loves to throw Garrett Riley under the bus. I don't know what it was, but, you know, but then you also look at it and you go, okay, well, they should have beaten Duke. They beat whatever the corpse of Florida State is at this point. Does this make them back, so to speak? I don't know. But, like, I understand not trusting Louisville either. And, look, I mean, this is just the nature of the beast in college football this season. Outside of the elite teams, like, anything can happen with those mid-tier types of teams, and it wouldn't surprise me. But, you know, I mean, for Clemson, I guess maybe people are thinking, okay, well, you know, they played well the last two games, so they must be kind of figuring something out. I'm not going to lay it. I'm not going to take it. It's not a game that I'm going to play, but it is interesting to see the market moving, you know, early in the week on a game like that.
Yeah, this is a pretty clear stay-away game for me on Florida State taking on, or excuse me, Clemson taking on Louisville. Decent Friday night game, and obviously big implications for not only the ACC, but the college football playoff moving forward with Louisville sitting there at 7-2. They have that game at SMU, and I personally kind of hope Louisville wins this game just to give us a pretty juicy matchup down in Dallas with a lot on the line for the ACC, Adam. I want to get to the Heisman Trophy because a couple weeks ago on this show, I brought up that Julian Sayin was creeping up the board, and I said, oh man, I don't really know about that. And you quickly said, look at his numbers. His numbers are tremendous. And right now, we're sitting at almost a dead heat between those two for the Heisman Trophy. Ty Simpson's lurking a little bit behind. He's got opportunities against Oklahoma this weekend, but Julian Sands at plus 180 and Fernando Mendoza's at plus 185. And I know there was a Heisman moment, if you will, on Saturday from Fernando Mendoza on an incredible game-winning drive, albeit as a two-touchdown underdog, but still game-winning drive to get that victory. But our buddy Brad Powers pointed this out regarding Julian Sands. He is number one in QBR, number one in passer rating, number one in completion percentage, and as he points out, 8% better than anyone else, number one in Pro Football Focus pass grade and offensive grade, and number two in yards per attempt, only behind CJ Carr. So I know that Gus Johnson, while he was losing his voice, said, give him the Heisman Trophy now. They were very much on the about to lose to a Penn State team that was a two-touchdown home underdog. And I'm not trying to dispel Fernando Mendoza, but you pointed it out a couple weeks ago. We are not talking enough about Julian Sayin and the season he is having at Ohio State.
Well, I think we're not talking about it enough for a couple of reasons. One, because it's Ohio State, right? I mean, they were, you know, they were going to be a favorite over everybody throughout the course of the season. And Sayin didn't really do anything in their marquee game against Texas. Now, to me, that wasn't his fault. That was more about the play calling and Ryan Day and Brian Hartline just being way too conservative in that one. Also, you know, I mean, the wide receivers, right? When you have Jeremiah Smith, like, people are going to be like, well, yeah, of course you're going to look good. You know, and of course, Cardinal Tate didn't play in the game against Purdue, but he's having a big season too. So it's kind of a lot of things, right, that are sort of going against Julian Sayin. But when you brought him up, the reason why I said we need to look at his numbers is because Ohio State can't run the football. I mean, you know, they are not running it to the degree that they usually do, 4.5 yards per carry, still have 16 rushing touchdowns. A lot of them are in very, very short yardage situations. They had trouble running the football against Purdue. Purdue's a pretty good run defense, all things considered, because their pass defense is not good at all. But, you know, Ohio State can't really run the football. So they've been using Sayin a lot as an extension of the run because he's such a high efficiency quarterback in terms of completing his throws, makes a lot of smart decisions. The offensive line is playing really, really well. So, you know, for Sayin, like, people are going to look at it and say, well, he's got all these things going for him, right? Like, Name a wide receiver. Ask some, you know, casual college football fan to name a wide receiver on Indiana's team.
Well, after
like up until Saturday, I couldn't name one until Omar Cooper did what he did. So, you know, I consider myself a, you know, pretty well-versed college football fan. But that's the thing, right? You know, Sayin has maybe the best offensive player in the country in Jeremiah Smith. He's got this elite level team around him. And I think it's just still really hard for people to wrap their heads around the idea that Indiana is an elite football team. So, you know, I think that Sayin's not getting talked about enough for a variety of different reasons. But look, I mean, he is the reason why Ohio State, oh, the defense too, but he is the reason why Ohio State's been blowing pretty much everybody out this season is because they can't run. They're not using the run really to salt games away. They just let Sayin keep throwing 6-7 yard passes and maybe the wide receiver breaks it. And the dude just makes every correct decision, it feels like. So the other thing about Ohio State that I think people aren't really talking about enough is like they rotated a bunch of guys in that game against Purdue. They showed basically nothing early on in the season out of the playbook. They're basically just treating the regular season like it's spring training or something like that, where they know their season starts when the college football playoff begins. So like they're not burning anybody out. They're rotating a bunch of guys around. The snap counts are lower. You know, Sands doing a lot of easy pitch and catch, probably some vanilla route concepts, stuff like that. They're holding a ton back right now. And I think that's something people are going to have to keep in mind when they do meet Indiana in the Big Ten title game.
Well, I mean, you look at Ohio State and they kind of, I mean, I know they didn't want to lose to Michigan last year, but it was kind of the perfect situation. And they hit their stride in the playoff. And now they're 9-0. First time this year they didn't cover a game against Purdue with that late touchdown by the Boilermakers. So they're 7-1-1 ATS this year. They have UCLA and Rutgers at home the next 2 weeks where they're going to be enormous favorites. Obviously, the Michigan game means a ton to the fan base and to that program. You don't want to make it 5 years in a row with a loss to Michigan. And then you've got the showdown in Indianapolis, which, you know, with the new rules in the college football playoff, Adam, I'm so curious to see how that game is played. Are they just going to play their asses off? I would hope so. You're going to get a number one versus number two matchup, assuming chalk holds over the next couple of weeks with Indiana and Ohio State. Indiana, by the way, they got their scare. They are not going to get scared. Home to Wisconsin and then Purdue on the road to wrap up the season, where they might try to score a million points like they did last year. So, yeah, I'd be curious to see how that game has played out. I know the look-ahead line shifted a little bit based off of last weekend. It was 3.5. FanDuel now has it up to 5.5. But it looks like we have 12-0 versus 12-0, and the Heisman Trophy very well could be on the line. I think that's the question, Adam, I want to pose. Is the Heisman Trophy as simple enough the winner of the Big Ten Championship, or does Ty Simpson and or Marcel Reed have a shot? Because it seems like those four and then everybody else, right? Diego Pavia is way down. Jeremiah Love is way down. To me, it feels like those four teams, their quarterbacks seemingly are the only option for the Heisman Trophy this year.
I mean, I think it's got to be between Sane and Mendoza at this point, right? Because, you know, as you said, I mean, both teams should go into the Big Ten championship game at 12-0. I mean, if Ohio State loses to Michigan again, I'm going to be absolutely furious, which would make it for an interesting thing, right? Because then all of a sudden Michigan's very much in the college football playoff discussion. 100%. They probably would make it, to be honest with you. You know,
I
mean, look,
I
mean,
the number one team. No, I mean, that's a pretty wild scenario. And I see we have a little corner box for those who can't see us. Wyatt, our producer, is a Michigan fan. His little head popped up over there shaking his head. It is true, though. If Michigan beats Ohio State, they're going to be a two loss team with the best win in the country. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be quite a situation. You know, a lot in the Big Ten is going to get figured out. Oregon, I'll give them credit, gutsy win on the road and that slop over the weekend. But they still have USC. Washington game maybe doesn't look as weird, but that's a rivalry game on the road, final week of the season after Washington lays an egg against Wisconsin. So, yeah, the playoff, there's still a lot of wackiness that can unfold with some playoff opportunities out there. But, you know, Ty Simpson, honestly, plays Oklahoma this weekend, Adam. Could he put up gaudy numbers? I suppose. Oklahoma's defense is really good. So if he, you know, puts up a big number, then they beat A&M in the championship game of the SEC, he could get into it. But it does feel like right now the odds are accurate where those two, Mendoza and Sayan, are the front runners, and they should be.
By the way, speaking of teams that can't run the football, Alabama's only averaging 3.5 yards a carry this season, which is just mind-blowing to me. And maybe Simpson's not getting talked about enough for what he's been doing to kind of drag this offense along. Marcel Reed doesn't have the numbers. Like, 7-1 is a bad price on him. There's absolutely no way I would look at that. It's a three-horse race, and look, if he goes out there and puts up numbers against Oklahoma, he's going to tighten this race a little bit. There's no question about that to me. Even if Sane and Mendoza play well the rest of the way, you know, I mean, this is an Alabama team that I think we kind of talked about this like 2 months ago when Alabama beat Georgia and kind of seemed like they were starting to roll a little bit. We're going to look back at the Florida State game, and it's going to be one of the most what the hell happened here games of the season. That's precisely what it looks like right now for this team. I honestly think they win and cover against Oklahoma, and I think they're going to beat Auburn handily in the Iron Bowl. Simpson's got a shot, but at 4-1, under 4-1, I don't think it's a good enough shot for me to take that price.
So you're saying week one road losses maybe shouldn't be weighed all that much. Interesting. It's an interesting.
Especially in the transfer portal era, right? Where you're trying to figure everything out. I know you've had spring games, summer practices, two-a-days, all this fall camp, all these kinds of things. But, like, it is so hard to be ready to go. And I think you should be rewarded if you are, but I also don't think it should be held against you that much if you aren't, especially if you run the table the rest of the way.
By the way, before we hit a break, Texas Tech did what I thought they would do. They dominated BYU. That number, how about that number before kickoff? We went up to 13.5. It was just one-way action on Texas Tech. And, man, that defense is tenacious. And, you know, they didn't win at Arizona State. Morton was hurt in that game. Hammond started. And I'm not saying Morton's this great quarterback, but, you know, to me, it kind of felt, it was a bit frustrating. Texas Tech not really taking advantage, I felt like, early on in that game, but they ended up pulling away and winning that. I said it last week, I don't really see a path for two Big 12 teams at this point, right? Texas Tech already has a loss. I think the only way was BYU to win on Saturday, to run the table and then lose in the Big 12 championship. I'd be interested to see how far BYU drops in the playoff rankings. They were 7 coming in. We know that this committee weighs a lot on the metrics, and the BYU metrics are not great, right? They were probably, I don't know where you had them, you know, a fringe top 20 team in most people's power ratings. So it's looking pretty clear that Texas Tech is the rightful favorite, but the winner of that conference for a second straight year is the only one that's going to get in.
Yeah, I actually, I did make a little bit of an adjustment to BYU, but I have them 26th in my power ratings. So fringe top 20 is a pretty accurate wording there. I mean, I guess there's a path where Utah finds their way into the championship game in the Big 12 and beats Texas Tech. I mean, that was kind of a game for three quarters, you know, before Texas Tech really put it away in the fourth quarter. I still think Utah is pretty clearly the second best team in this conference. So if things fall their way, and they certainly could, the difficult thing is going to be BYU and Cincinnati play against each other. So one of them has to win that game.
Yep.
But, you know, all of a sudden, like, TCU, who I have no idea, we have 9 data points for TCU. I still don't know what they are. Josh Hoover's really good. The rest of the team, I have no clue. But all of a sudden, TCU plays a massive role in the Big 12 and in the college football playoff rankings because they play both BYU and Cincinnati. So that's going to be interesting to see as we go throughout the rest of the way here. But Texas Tech is clearly the best team in this conference. And it got me thinking, you know, I mean, Texas Tech's offense is nothing to scoff at either. You know, I mean, their offense has been very good this season. Obviously, Ohio State's been very efficient. What would you make a total between Texas Tech and Ohio State with those two defenses? Like 43.5, 42.5?
44, like under 45, like 44.5, somewhere in that ballpark. It's fair point. You know, Utah did come in at 13. That's going to be another one of those situations, right, that everyone gets all fired up about. Utah lost to BYU, and now BYU only has one loss. Do they drop them behind Utah? Probably not. But, you know, we'll see what Tuesday shows us from the playoff rankings. But the Big 12 starting to figure itself out. But Utah, as you alluded to, certainly did get a lot of credit by the committee. They were ranked ahead of every ACC team in the initial rankings. They didn't play this weekend. They're back at it on Saturday on the road in Waco. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll do a little overreaction market correction. We will take a peek at some of the big adjustments that Adam made in his power rating article over at VSiN.com as well. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And just a thank you again and a reminder about our friends over at Rainbow Authentics. Looking forward to hanging out with a number of those folks, including our guy Mike, when they come to town for the Hawaii UNLV game. Speaking of making a total, Adam, that next Friday night at Allegiant Stadium. Oh, buddy, that total is going to be near 70, maybe 70 or higher. We'll see. But Rainbow Authentics, your official source for game-used apparel, autographs, trading cards for your favorite Hawaii student-athlete. Every item tells a story, whether it's a game-worn jersey, signed ball, or unique collectibles. You'll be capturing the moment and owning a piece of Hawaii sports history. Beyond memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is committed to supporting the community. The mission is rooted in empowering student-athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. With exclusive custom gear, Rainbow Authentics also makes sure you look your best every game day. Find all their unique items, including some new merch, which apparently is in the works over at RainbowAuthentics.com. Mahalo to our friends Rainbow Authentics. They've been a proud sponsor of this podcast all season long. Adam, let us know what's going on over at VSiN.com. What a time to be a VSiN Pro subscriber.
Yeah, it really is. You know, we're recording this on Monday, and I spent a good 20 minutes on Monday morning trying to find injury information about SIU Edwardsville's basketball team. So I know that we're very much in the heat of college basketball season now, second full week getting underway here. Greg Peterson's daily article, I write up my favorite plays Monday through Saturday. But I mean, look, like you said, it's such a busy time of the year. The, you know, five of the six major North American sports are going, with Major League Baseball done, although still plenty of baseball news to go around. It would seem none of it good for the most part, but yeah, man, very, very busy time of the year. And, you know, we still cover horse racing. I know that we don't have a lot of big golf events, but you know, your Wednesday guest, Wes Reynolds, covering golf for us. Good time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. The Sports Equinox special still going on, $120. Be a VSiN Pro subscriber through May 1st, which includes Opta AI player prop projections for the NFL and NBA. So, look, man, we got a great tool set. We got great content. We got great writers. You know, you can watch VSiN on VSiN.com if you're a pro subscriber. So all kinds of bells and whistles and benefits, that's for sure.
You've got your article up. Speaking of VSiN Pro, you write it every Sunday, your updated power ratings, look ahead to some games for this upcoming week. And the biggest line move of the week from the look ahead to now coincides with the biggest adjustment you made in your power ratings, which is Florida. And I loved Kentucky last week. I was a bit surprised that the market went up to 4 prior to kick. I didn't fully understand that. Thought it was a horrific spot for Florida coming off the Georgia game. They had all these types of injuries at wide receiver. And lo and behold, I wish they were all that easy, because Kentucky absolutely mopped the floor with Florida. So we've seen a line move, Adam, of 7.5 last week, the look ahead number, to now 15.5 at Ole Miss. Lane Kiffin is out there retweeting articles about DJ Lagway being benched, and you have dropped them 6 points in your power ratings.
I love Lane Kiffin, man. That guy, he is incredible. Yeah, I mean, I dropped Florida 6 points, like you said. It felt like last week was Florida quitting. You know, I mean, they had that close game against Georgia. You know, again, it wouldn't have been as close if Gunnar Stockton finishes off that run. Instead, takes a knee at the 1.5-yard line, and Georgia wins 24-20, but it was a 31-20 game for all intents and purposes. And, you know, I was on Florida last week. I was like, all right, look, this is still a really talented team. It's still a very good defense. My number in the game was 7, so I was well above market. Turns out I was very, very wrong in that game. Florida did not show up at all. Kentucky gave the defense a bunch of turnovers, and the offense just gave the football right back. Disaster. Absolute disaster class from Florida last week, and I think that they've quit. I really, truly do. I mean, Billy Napier was going to be fired for like the last 2.5 years, and it finally happened. I think their last gasp was that Georgia game. Maybe they rally for Florida State, who also is a mess, and maybe we know about Mike Norvell's future by then. But the next 2 weeks against Ole Miss and Tennessee, I think Florida gets boat raced in both of them.
Yeah, it's hard to see this team getting off the mat. And for Ole Miss, you know, after last year and losing the games that they lost, it feels like they won't let that happen again. You know, Lane's Lane. He's out there taking pictures with people getting engaged on the field. I mean, the dude is just, so many people, I think for a while he kind of bugged me, but at this point I'm all in on Lane. I love him. Yeah. He's great for the sport. And, you know, 2 games left. You've got the Egg Bowl, and then you've got this weekend. And here's the thing, you know, last year, a big reason why Ole Miss missed the playoff was this game, right? Losing on the road at Florida is a double-digit favorite. I wish I could go back in time right now and take the 7.5, because I didn't really think of it. I very rarely, to be honest, bet look-ahead lines, because I do want to see what unfolds. I just think this spot, you hit it. The team is done. They're benching their quarterback. And Ole Miss is going to be out for blood, man. Like, this is the reason they didn't make the playoff a year ago. I mean, they also lost to Kentucky earlier in the year. But as we've discussed, in the SEC, you're allowed a mulligan, not mulligans. Happened to Alabama last year and happened to Ole Miss. I would agree. I don't know what number I would have to in order to take Florida, but it would certainly be Ole Miss or pass for me in this spot.
Yeah, and, you know, it's the one thing that concerns me is you get a lot of games where Ole Miss badly outgains the other team, and for some reason they don't win by margin. Like, I think back to the LSU game that they played, what was that, early October?
September 27th.
Yeah, I mean, they badly outgained 480 to 254 in that game. They won 24-19. Like, for some reason, this is something that happens to Lane. Now, the nice thing here is that Florida has no offense whatsoever, because Ole Miss, when they lose, it's like a 48-45 type of game. He doesn't have to worry about that this week. But for some reason, they have these games where they just totally dominate the box score and leave a bunch of points on the field, or there's some sort of special team screw up or something like that, and they wind up not winning by margin. I don't know. I mean, they basically had a glorified bye last week while we saw, you know, Florida get pummeled by Kentucky in a head-to-head rivalry that they've dominated, by the way, over like the last 35 years. Everything's pointing towards, you know, Lane being able to blow him out here, and he definitely should. And you know, they get some extra rest before the Egg Bowl, which I think is a good thing for them just to avoid any sort of slip up.
You know, it's funny. Sometimes we see big movements in the market and, you know, you scratch your head. Case in point, last week, San Diego State, Hawaii, look ahead was 2.5, closed around 7, didn't really understand the move, and Hawaii wins the game going away. There really weren't many moves, Adam, from the look ahead to where we are now. Texas and Georgia, 6, still 6. Oklahoma was 7, got up to 7.5, has now been bet down to 6.5, so a little bit of love coming in on the Sooners.
By the way, I totally disagree with this number going under 7. Alabama should be over a touchdown favorite in this game. I mean, John Mateer has not looked remotely the same since before the injury. And this is something, you know, when I picked on Oklahoma in the game against Ole Miss, and I picked on him, you know, I've tried to pick on him a couple of times here. Like, Tennessee is the first good offense that I guess they've kind of slowed down a little bit. But Joey Aguilar threw for almost 400 yards. Tennessee had 456 yards in that game. Oklahoma's defense, to me, is extremely overrated. They have not played many good offenses at all whatsoever. I like Alabama minus the 6.5 here.
Notre Dame and Pitt, this game opened 10 in the look ahead. It's now 11.5 at DraftKings. I think 10.5 market-wide. Pitt's coming off a bye. Notre Dame dominated Navy. They did have a injury on the defensive line. Donovan Heinisch, I would imagine he is back. College Game Day, by the way, will be in Pittsburgh for the first time, I think, since the Notre Dame Pitt game in 2005.
That's got to be a Pat McAfee thing, right?
I think it had a lot to do with Mr. McAfee and his presence and being from Pittsburgh. And I mean, I think they got a little bit of a pushback from too many SEC games. Let's be real. As much as I love Notre Dame being, you know, highlighted, it should be Oklahoma, Alabama. Like, that's the best game of the week. But
you know what? I mean, if the wagon wheel
Texas,
game
Georgia.
Wasn't on, if the wagon wheel wasn't on Tuesday night between Kent State and Akron, and it was a Saturday game, College Game Day would have been in the Rubber City.
It's true. Yeah. Damn you, Maction, ruining College Game Day. Don't you realize that? But you actually wrote this game up, Notre Dame Pitt. I'm wondering, and once again, as everyone knows, I don't need to tell you what team I cheer for, but you've seen the last 2 weeks, right? You saw Utah laying a big number against Cincinnati. How'd that play out? You saw Texas Tech laying a big number against BYU. How'd that play out? Now, this is a little bit different. Notre Dame is on the road at Pitt laying in double digits here. What do you make of this game, and are you looking at the Irish here?
Yeah, so this is tricky, right? And one of the reasons why it's kind of hard for me to put as much weight in my power ratings this late in the season as I would earlier on, you've had to increase Notre Dame, right? Almost week after week after week, because they just keep pummeling everybody. And so you want to give them that market respect, but now they're actually kind of playing, you know, a team with a pulse, right? I mean, this kind of feels like the USC game to me,
yep,
where it's going to be closer for comfort than, you know, Boston College and Navy. And honestly, they didn't play well against Boston College anyway. But, you know, they're a team that, like, we talked about this. They want to put up style points. So I've kind of accounted for that in my power ratings by continuously going up little by little on Notre Dame each and every week. But you get to a point where maybe that gets a little bit too high, and possibly this is that week. I have Notre Dame a 15-point favorite in this game. So definitely a little bit off of market, especially for the time of the year when things should be a little bit tighter, you know, with my power ratings and what the betting odds are out there, you know, in the marketplace. So I could be a little bit high on Notre Dame at this point, but also is Pitt really any good? I don't know. I really truly don't know. I mean, 5-game winning streak, Boston College, they beat a ranked Florida State team, Syracuse, who can't throw a forward pass, NC State, that's a nice win for them, but then Stanford, like, Stanford's terrible, as we know, although they finally made a quarterback change last week, and that guy was a lot better than Gulbranson was, so maybe Stanford's a team we got to upgrade a little bit as a sidebar there, but look, I don't know that Pitt is any good, right? I mean, the two best teams they've played, they've lost to both of them. I mean, I guess you could say West Virginia is not very good. At the time, West Virginia was okay, but this is it. Like, I don't see Pitt playing a team that's comparable or better than them throughout most of their schedule, and now they are. So I'm not surprised if Notre Dame wins this game by margin.
Yeah, I think the big thing is Heinschel and how they protect him, right? There were a couple moments. He got sacked 5 times at Florida State, 7 times on the road at Syracuse, but they've cleaned it up the last couple of games. NC State, he didn't get sacked. And I would say NC State, they're certainly pretty Jekyll and Hyde this year, the Wolfpack are. But, you know, putting up 53 on NC State, I don't think is a horrible result, especially since NC State beat Virginia and beat Georgia Tech last time out. So very curious to see how this one plays. You mentioned style points. Notre Dame, if they can put it on Pitt, they're in. You know, they've got Syracuse and Stanford after to wrap up the season. This is it. This is the play-in game for the Irish. They lose, they're done. They win, they're in. Especially if they win convincingly. So I think if they can, they will put it on them. We'll just see how Pitt ultimately does. You know, one thing I need to keep a close eye on here, I know Pitt's been dealing with a bunch of injuries, so I haven't made a, you know, strong case one way or the other for either team. I have not bet this game yet, but I do need to kind of get eyes on Pitt and all the injuries that they've been dealing with, because I know they've been a bit banged up. But did the bye week come at the right time where maybe they could ultimately kind of get healthy enough to take on this Notre Dame team?
Yeah, and that's another reason with the power ratings, you know, why I'm not weighing them as heavily as I do early on in the season, right? I mean, I joked about it on the college basketball side with trying to find SIU Edwardsville injury information, because it was a 3-point line move, so I'm thinking somebody must be out. There's a guy who only played 13 minutes the game prior. So, like, you have all these context clues, but for some of these teams, you just don't get coverage. You know, maybe there's not a local beat writer. Maybe the newspaper can't afford one. The newspaper site is paywalled. You know, all these different kinds of things. So it can be really hard to find a lot of injury information. Some of it comes very late in college football. Like, I had no idea that Blake Horvath wasn't going to play last week for Navy. No one had any clue. Like, there was just no inkling whatsoever.
There were whispers on, like, Saturday afternoon. Right. And I tried to look into it a little bit more. I got nothing. And then, you know, 40 minutes before the game, Blake Horvath's out. And
right.
Does Navy cover if Horvath is playing? Probably not. I mean, Notre Dame, Navy could not stop Notre Dame in that game, especially in the second half. Look, Navy, you know, and that's going to be the fascination about this game, Adam, is what does Pitt decide to do defensively? Because we saw Boston College load the box. Navy did the same. And it's going to make CJ Carr throw the ball. The problem about that is CJ Carr seems to be getting pretty darn comfortable at throwing the football. And even in rain and snow on Saturday night, I think he went 13 of 16 for some big plays. So, you know, Notre Dame's wide receivers, they're not elite. They're not Alabama. They're not, you know, Ohio State by any stretch of the imagination, but they're definitely improved from a year ago. And CJ Carr is a better passer than Riley Leonard is. So that's going to be pretty interesting to see what Narduzzi decides to do. I mean, I still remember in 2015 when the Nard Dope tried to single cover Will Fuller and they went for 3 touchdowns immediately. So I don't know if you'll be thick-headed and think that they can stop Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price without loading the box. If they do, Notre Dame will run all over them. But I think the way to go about beating Notre Dame or trying to beat him is is to get after a freshman quarterback and make him throw the football. So curious to see what the game plan is, because, you know, against Boston College, it was frustrating, right, for the Irish, and they didn't really separate themselves until they got that Jeremiah Love 94-yard touchdown run.
Yeah, and to finish up the point I was making, you know, about my power ratings and all that, like, we are 11 weeks into the season. It is a very violent game. Guys are hurt. Guys are banged up. And we have no idea, for the most part, because, you know, obviously these colleges and universities, you know, protect that information for their players and, you know, don't share a whole lot of things and stuff like that. You know, I know when Stormy was doing the Utah-Arizona State game, like, the Sam Levitt stuff kind of started coming out on Thursday that, like, he was probably doubtful. And I was stuck holding the bag with a bad number on Arizona State, who wound up getting completely blown out. And, like, Stormy barely knew anything until Friday, you know, and because I asked her after the fact, you know, obviously she wasn't going to share any information with me, you know, beforehand. But I asked her after the fact, I was like, I asked her on Tuesday when I went in to do my spot. I was like, did you know anything about Levitt? And she's like, kind of had heard that maybe there was a chance, but there was nothing definitive. And, like, that's just what we deal with, you know, all the time in college football, but especially late in the season where, you know, we're just not going to be told a lot of things. And look, I mean, there are also some teams, you know, maybe you're 2-7, right? You're not going to a bowl game. Maybe you're 3-6 and you're not going to run the table, right? You may play that freshman because you may want that freshman to stick around instead of jump into the transfer portal. And we don't know these things until these teams actually step on the field. So that's why I'm weighing my power ratings a lot less at this time of the year, because there are going to be things at positions that we don't really know. Coaches planning for next year, coaches that are just super shorthanded. We just don't know. And one other thing I want to mention, because you mentioned it with the rain and the bad weather for Notre Dame, I cannot stress this enough, especially because there are 32 NFL cities. There are 16 home games in a week without buys. There are a lot of domes, all these kinds of things, right? We know the NFL weather. We pay close attention to it. It's talked about a ton. There are so many locales in college football. You've got to check the weather in a lot of these spots, because now is the time of the year where it can be pretty gnarly in some of these games.
Yeah, shout out to Ian Fitzsimmons of ESPN Radio. He was on the tailgate show with me on Saturday, as he is every week. His game was Iowa and Oregon. He did his hit with me outside and let us know about the weather. And I think we kind of knew it was going to be crappy in Iowa City. But that was gross, that game. And, you know, credit to Oregon, man. That's a good win, game-winning field goal. And, you know, I have my questions about Oregon, but that's a good win to go on the road. I know they didn't cover, so a lot of folks, Matt had Iowa plus the points. I actually took a little first half, which was a fun L, because they kicked a field goal from like 50 yards out at the end of the first half, which was cool for Oregon to get the first half cover against Iowa. But
Atticus Sappington?
Long season great long, name. Of course, nailed it. Perfect in the snow, in the rain, or whatever it was. Just an absolute perfect boot there. As we wrap things up here, Adam, we do have Maction, and I was able to get home on a Maction play last week, so I felt good about myself. Ohio beating Miami of Ohio. Now the Bobcats are a slight road favorite at Western Michigan, and I mean, we've been going for almost an hour. Do you want to spend another hour breaking down the wagon wheel game, Akron hosting Kent State?
I do not. But I will say a couple of things about these games, right? Why not? First time Akron's been favored over an FBS opponent in consecutive weeks since 2018. So there is that. This is Akron's bowl game, by the way. I mentioned that last week on the show. They cannot make a bowl, and honestly, they have as good of a shot at making one as they've had in a very, very long time, sitting here at 4-6 with Kent State and Bowling Green left, but they didn't do well in the classroom. So their APR scores were too low. They have a postseason ban. They can't go to a bowl game. So this is their bowl game. They've won back-to-back here in the wagon wheel rivalry, hoping to make it 3 in a row. Also, even up the lifetime series since they had the wagon wheel trophy come in 1946. So, you know, if anyone needs to know more than they wanted to know about this football game, there you go. I like Kent State plus the points, honestly. I mean, UMass seems to be relegated to like Division II with what Akron did to them last week. But I think Kent State's actually a pretty decent team. I got screwed over on their money line last week against Ball State, where they gave that one away late. But this team is definitely better. And I still don't trust Akron laying a number against anybody with a pulse. But look, this Ohio-Western Michigan game is a big one. Both of these teams with one loss in conference play. You're talking about all the one-loss teams in some of the other conferences, the AAC, the ACC. There are four teams in this conference right now that are 4-1. Ohio just got the tiebreaker over Miami last week. Buffalo is 4-1, and Western Michigan is 4-1. And Western Michigan, a team I loved over their season win total coming into the season. So we'll see if it gets there, because it was 5.5 over plus money. But this is a big game here with both of these teams at 4-1 in conference play. Maybe they meet again. I don't know. But Western Michigan is a team, they're strong on defense. They're very strong on defense. They are not very good on offense. So I think that you look at this total, 46.5, 47. I think the movement toward the under is the correct play in this game. And that would be what I would look at, as opposed to a side in a coin flippy type of game.
You know you're bad when Northern Illinois is laying double digits on the road. And that's what UMass is doing right now. I mean, that's the Wednesday game. God bless you. I mean, we all say we love Maction. This one. Now, I will say this. Toledo and Miami of Ohio, this should be a pretty good one. And once again, you've got Jason Candle laying points here against the Redhawks. I would take Chuck Martin every day and twice on Sunday in this matchup as a coach. That being said, the roster, Toledo's going to have more talent. Interest in the dog here in Miami taking on the Toledo Rockets.
Yeah, I got to say, I mean, the market loves Toledo. The market has really liked Toledo a lot throughout the course of this season. Even bet them up in that game last week against Northern Illinois, which obviously wound up being the side. The under was also the side, except for the kick return touchdown to open the game. That kind of submarined that. But the market really likes Toledo. So I'm curious to see if this line starts to move. If it doesn't, that tells me that Miami of Ohio is definitely the side in this game. Toledo is number two in the country in yards per play allowed on defense. They are an exceptional defensive team. Not so good on offense, but really, really good on defense. I think that's why the market has liked them a lot. The market has liked Oklahoma a lot, too, as a team that's, you know, really strong in terms of a yards per play standpoint on the defensive side of things. I don't know if it's how people are weighting their models or what, if they're just kind of more heavily weighting defense this season for one reason or another. But, you know, there has been a lot of steam on Toledo pretty consistently here throughout the course of the season. So I think if this one, you know, stays in that 3.5 range, and especially if it comes down to three, that's when I know that Miami is the right side in that game.
So a lot of people have heard me talk about it, and our buddy Brad Powers will, I'm sure, mention it at some point on Twitter. But Jason Candle as a favorite. So if you just go back to 2021, I know he's been at Toledo longer, but since 2021, Toledo is actually the best underdog team in college football. They're 8-1 against the spread. But if you go to when you're a favorite, Toledo has lost 23 games outright as a favorite since 2021. They are 24-30 ATS as a favorite. So Jason Campbell, that's kind of been his MO. And a little bit of revenge. Last year, Toledo did beat Miami in the regular season in Toledo. So we'll see. I could certainly find myself maybe on the Redhawks here at this spot. But like you said, this has been a spot where the sharp guys love Toledo based off of the numbers. So maybe they'll bet this thing up. But that actually is a fun one on Wednesday. We have a Sun Belt game on Thursday. Troy at Old Dominion. Looks like James Madison's kind of running away with that conference. You know, shout out to a bunch of people who jumped on the podcast over the summer, Adam, that loves Southern Miss. I ended up playing their season win total over. I should have done some alt numbers. The Southern Miss Thundering Herd are now 7-2 on the year, and they very well could be in the conference championship game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, when you bring your head coach and half the players from that program, you know, to another spot, seems to work out pretty well for you. I think the Troy Old Dominion number is a little bit high. Troy, there was such a giant market adjustment to Troy when quarterback Goose Crowder went out. And Tucker Kilcrease has played. He's been in that program for a while. I had questions about Jerad Parker coming into the season. I still do, especially because Troy has had so many good hires here over the last, 10 to 15 years, ever since Larry Blakeney left the program and retired. I think that line's a little bit high. Old Dominion, they started really hot. They haven't played the same way over the last few weeks here. I think that one's a little bit high. I do like Troy in that Thursday night game getting doubles.
All right, before we get out of here, we'll talk more situational spots with Wes on Wednesday. The first bet I made as I watched Penn State take on Indiana and play their absolute ass off and were that close to beating Indiana, what has been an absolutely forgettable season. I know Michigan State stinks. I immediately took Michigan State. I got them 8.5 on Sunday. It was still 7.5 when I put it on the website. It's down to 7. If Penn State shows up for that game, Adam, credit to them. Like, this season has been a lost year. It felt like that was their Super Bowl. I know Michigan State stinks. They're coming off a bye. I don't know what to expect from them. That is a horrific spot for Penn State. But if they get off the mat after getting their guts ripped out against the number two team in the country, credit to them. But I wouldn't be surprised if Michigan State might even pull an outright upset on Saturday in East Lansing against Penn State.
Yeah, I don't hate that play at all. I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I don't like Michigan State at all. I've actually been really underwhelmed with the job that Jonathan Smith has
totally
done there
agree.
So far. We'll see if maybe that changes going into year three next year. But yeah, I mean, for Penn State, how do you get off the deck, right? I mean, your season basically became, can we beat Ohio State? And they played for a half with Ohio State before the Buckeyes put them away. And can we beat Indiana? And they were literally like toes away from beating Indiana. I don't know how you get up to go play in East Lansing where there's probably going to be like no atmosphere whatsoever to that game because it's college basketball season in East Lansing now. Especially you got a really good number too, getting 8.5. Anything north of a touchdown was a great grab. Touchdown or better, I think it's worth it. 6.5, 6. It gets a little bit dicier just because Penn State's a more talented team.
No, I totally agree. I think 7, don't love it at 7. You want that hook. Anything under 7 would be a pass for me. That's why I wanted to get it on the picks page as quick as possible. The other one is I loved UConn. I thought I was one of the spots of the year last week. And I mentioned that Jim Mora Jr. has done an amazing job. They were, I don't know if it was a sellout, Adam. The crowd was great. Like, watching that game on Saturday, I'm like, oh my God, is there an atmosphere at this game? And there was. But here's the thing. Air Force, if you look at the box score and the postgame win expectancy, had no business beating San Jose State. But now they're catching a full touchdown, actually 7.5 at FanDuel against UConn. Both these teams are tragic defensively. I think UConn just kind of won their biggest game of the year, and now you got to face this funky offense that can score, man. I'll take a touchdown and a hook of Air Force on the road. Weird start time, but I tend to not think service academies give you that letdown factor. And when you look at Air Force, you know, this is a team that's been underwhelming so far this year, as I mentioned with the defense. But, you know, Adam, after that win against San Jose State, they're now 3-6. It's going to be a challenge, but they have New Mexico at home next week and then Colorado State on the road. A bowl is still out there for Air Force. They can't win the CIC. I think you're going to get a really good effort from Air Force on Saturday, and I'm curious how UConn bounces back because now when you look at UConn, Adam, what's ahead of them? Their bowl game. They're going to be great in that bowl game. I'm telling you right now. Do they really give a crap about Air Force after beating Duke, a Power Four team? I think this is a weird spot for UConn. Two really good offenses, bad defenses. I'll take north of a touchdown.
Yeah, I can't blame you. And the market seems to be in line with that here, too. I have it UConn -9.5. But again, that's just a raw power rating, not taking into account, you know, the style of offense that Air Force plays that could kind of condense this game a little bit, limit the possessions. And also the spot for UConn, as you mentioned, is pretty rough. I mean, you know, 2 hours ahead of time kickoff for Air Force, though. So that's a little bit tricky for them. Travel cross country, stuff like that. No play for me in this one. But I mean, I guess over 63.5 wouldn't shock me.
No,
because this could be a game with some big time explosive plays. And also, you know, like for Mora and UConn, right? Like to your point of just beating Duke. how much emphasis do you put into how to prepare for the option in this type of game? Or do you just go out there and say, you know what, let's just hope we outscore them, you know, because it's hard to install all these option concepts on defense and all of that, you know, in the span of a few days when you're riding a high of beating Duke. So I could see over 63.5, but again, I got to check the weather for this one and see if, you know, UConn's going to be able to throw the football the way that they want to.
All right, before we get out of here, I got to ask you about this spot. Louisiana Tech at Washington State, late night on the CW. God bless the schedule makers for this one. What do you got with the boys from Ruston headed out to Pullman?
Yeah, this is as awkward as it gets, right? And Louisiana Tech also coming off of a bit of a surprising loss to Delaware, you know, in their last game. And that was one where, you know, I mean, Louisiana Tech, they're not good offensively. I mean, they're just not good offensively at all. Really good defense. Again, even losing their defensive coordinator, they're still very good on defense. The offense is bad. I mean, I have this number 2.5, but this is a miserable travel situation. Weird game in the middle of conference play. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't line up here to where, again, like I said, I'm not trusting my power ratings as much, you know, as I previously was. I want to throw one at you that's not really a situational spot, but South Carolina fired their OC, Mike Shula, and then they had a bye week. I think South Carolina covers against Texas A&M. I really, truly do. It's a big number with a lower scoring expectation, total in the upper 40s. Mike Shula has single-handedly ruined Lenora Sellers this season. Dowell Loggins was pretty good as the OC. Hasn't been a great head coach at App State. But I think with Shula gone, I think he was really holding them back. They also fired their offensive line coach, too. I think we get a spirited effort from South Carolina here in this one. I like them plus the 18.5, 19.5 there against Texas A&M.
We also saw this game get whacked right there rotation-wise. I'm doing it again, Adam. I'm betting Arkansas, but this time as an underdog. LSU, once again, you get the fired coach bump. You're fighting tooth and nail against Alabama. You fall up short. Now you got to play Arkansas, 11:45 a.m. local kick. Arkansas coming off a bye week. If you look at, by the way, if you look at the second, hold on, let me double check just so I say it right. Second order wins, which is the wins that based off of the numbers teams should have. Bill Conley has Arkansas at 5 wins. They have 2. That is wild. I mean, they are the polar opposite of Virginia. And I still think they're fighting, man. They're not very good, as we saw 2 weeks ago when they blew a 2-touchdown lead, but I don't need them to win. They could lose this game in catastrophic fashion. Just keep it within the number. And this number moved from 6.5 down to 4.5, 5 on Monday. But I do like Arkansas in this spot as an
Let me give you one more.
Ugly dog.
The only FCS versus FBS game this weekend. Tennessee Tech and Kentucky. So I'm only seeing a line for this one at FanDuel. I guess Hard Rock also has one, but I'm mostly seeing a line at FanDuel for this one early on in the week. So Kentucky beats Florida, right? Back-to-back SEC wins. They beat Auburn. They beat Florida. They are facing a Tennessee Tech team that is 10-0 on the season, perfect in OVC Big South play, most of their wins by double digits. I'm really interested to see, as more books open up, and as people who actually power rate the FCS get involved here, I'm really interested to see what happens with this number.
I love it. I love that spot. What is that? A 1:30 Eastern kick time in Kentucky?
Yep.
Yeah. That'll make the list. That'll make the letdown spot list for sure when we talk about that on primetime. All right, Adam, that's going to do it for the pod. Please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. Look, it has been an up and down Thursday pod, so I'm just going to give a quick shout out to Humans, 6-2. I was fell into a 6-0 week, so hopefully we could keep that rolling here. So 12-2 week for the podcast on Thursday. Hopefully we keep that thing rolling. But make sure you read all of Adam's work over at VSiN.com. And we'll be back on Wednesday with another episode of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast with Wes Reynolds and Brett Ciancia. Thanks to Wyatt Tomchek and Ryan Hunter, the producers of this podcast. I'm Tim Murray. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.